Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In talking about urban areas and population, focusing first on people makes sense. Humans are, after all, responsible for creating cities and what goes in them. But urban environments have inhabitants of the non-human sort too. And one of St. Louis's most common residents is one that you could very well see today, depending on where you are in the area. And that's the Eastern Gray Squirrel. Elizabeth Carlin is a postdoctoral fellow at WashU who spent the past 4 years studying these animals. She's part of a global coalition of scientists exploring how human-driven changes to urban environments shape the evolution of wildlife. Their paper on the topic was recently published in the journal Nature Cities. And Elizabeth joins us today to talk with us about her work. Liz, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, to be clear, you have a PhD, mammal biology, not in squirrels and not in pigeons. How is it that you came to study both of these animals?
Yeah, so I had always thought that I wanted to live in the middle of nowhere. I moved to East Texas in a town of about 100 people, and it was there that I realized that I don't like living in the middle of nowhere, that I really like living in cities, and that these cities are actually full of wildlife. I have to admit, there's also something about being able to come home after a day of field work and be able to shower and sleep in your own bed. That's very, very nice. But in these cities, these wildlife, I kind of grew up thinking about how cities are very inhospitable to wildlife. But as I started to think about cities and notice things and notice wildlife, there are wildlife that are absolutely thriving. And two of those that come into mind are pigeons and squirrels. And so I ended up doing my dissertation on pigeons and then moved to squirrels for my postdoctoral research.
Mm-hmm. What do the two animals have in common?
Both animals are prevalent in cities throughout North America, and both of these animals seem to be doing pretty well in these cities. Oftentimes, you see them in higher population densities in cities than you do in rural environments, and that really struck me because that's not what I was taught. I was taught that cities are not good for animals. So why are these animals doing so well?
Mm-hmm. So you are here in St. Louis for a postdoctoral fellowship. I mean, did you come to St. Louis for a postdoc because you knew that there are squirrels in this area?
I did. I was super interested in studying the squirrels in St. Louis. St. Louis has a very interesting environment. It's very segregated along the Del Mar Divide. And I was really interested in how that segregation would lead to downstream effects on wildlife. And while there's other cities in North America that have segregation, in fact, all cities in North America in the United States have some sort of segregation occurring. In St. Louis, it's very pronounced, and unlike other cities that are patchy in their segregation, St. Louis has this very solid divide.
Mm-hmm. And in what ways has it been pronounced? You know, are there very specific examples, maybe beyond the Del Mar Divide or along the Del Mar Divide, that illustrate that?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've noticed being a biologist walking or working in the different parts of St. Louis is prominently the alleyways in North St. Louis look very different. There's a lot more dumpster trash. So the trash is overflowing, likely because the dumpsters aren't picked up as frequently. There's also a lot of illegal dumping that's occurring in the northern part of the city. So you'll see giant piles of tires, of bricks, of mattresses, of things that people don't want to pay to dispose of in the county dump or the city dump. And so they'll just go dump it in these alleyways in North St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand, you did a considerable amount of research before moving to St. Louis, and you also moved to St. Louis at a very particular time. Talk with us about that.
So I moved to St. Louis in 2021, and that was very much the middle of the pandemic when I moved from New York City to St. Louis, and was very surprised when I got here that the pandemic did not seem to be a thing in St. Louis, that politically they were treating the pandemic in two very different ways. And I moved to St. Louis not being a St. Louis resident. I grew up in Oakland, California, and I was very conscious of the fact that I was moving to this city and wanted to pay taxes, city taxes, and learn about this city. So I spent a lot of time watching documentaries, reading books, listening to radio programs and podcasts and YouTube videos to try to understand the history of this city, because this area has been a city for a very long time, going back to the Cahokia people. It was part of the Mississippian culture. And there was a large, prominent urban area with the indigenous folks that were living here.
Something that strikes me as you're talking, Liz, is that I have to remind myself that you are a biologist and not someone who's in the social sciences. How do you square that? Do you need to square that when you're having conversations with people about your research and what you're looking at?
It depends on who I'm talking to. I've actually been told by some biologists that I should just forget that social science aspect. But personally, I think it makes my research stronger. Having this interdisciplinary work come together provides this opportunity to talk on deeper levels about cities and the impacts that they're having on wildlife. And I am not formally trained as a social scientist, so I'm very thankful to my colleagues that have been so gracious in their time giving me advice and teaching me about this field.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about squirrels now, because that is, frankly, one of the things that really interested me about the work that you're doing. What is this connection between squirrels and the people who live in St. Louis?
So oftentimes we think of wildlife as removed from humans because they're wildlife. And they're not, in fact, removed from humans. They're living with us, alongside us. And so the things that we are doing as humans are having impacts. When we throw away food garbage, the squirrels are eating that. If you search the internet, you'll find lots of photos and videos of pizza squirrel and egg roll squirrel and chicken wing squirrel.
And I'm laughing because my brother actually sent me a photo that he took with his phone. He's in Los Angeles and it was a photo of a pizza squirrel. It was an entire slice of pizza. This squirrel was up in a tree, and I hadn't realized that they're easy to find if you go to the dumpsters.
The best place to catch squirrels is next to dumpsters, because they are absolutely feeding in these dumpsters. And if you look closely at the dumpsters, you'll see gnaw marks from the squirrels. If you're quiet and kind of hang out for long enough, oftentimes you'll see them jump on the dumpster and dive in and go after that food. So all the food that we're eating is having impacts. Where our food deserts are in St. Louis, where we don't have access to fresh food, that's obviously having downstream effects on the wildlife.
So are you literally catching these squirrels? What does your research around them actually involve?
So we're obtaining squirrels in two different ways. One is we're live trapping them, and we take a little tiny sample about the size of a pinhead of tissue, and then we let that animal go right where we captured them. And then another opportunity that we have is the amount of roadkill that happens. And I find it very sad that these animals have died due to our car use. And so one way that I feel like I can honor that animal's life is to get as much data from them as possible. Mm-hmm. So that means I get lots of text messages and phone calls and emails from people in the biology department at WashU telling me where they've located a squirrel and can I go pick it up and get some data from that squirrel.
I wonder what that thread is called. Does it have a name?
It's just roadkill.
Okay. So what is the data that you are collecting? I mean, are you seeking certain differences?
We're trying to find out a couple different things. With that little pinhead amount of tissue, we can sequence the entire genome of the squirrel. And so we've sequenced that, and then we're doing basically 23andMe on squirrels. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to figure out where is that squirrel from. So in the same way that 23andMe can tell you if you have Scottish ancestry versus English ancestry, right? They're on the same island. We can then look at that squirrel DNA and tell you where in the city that squirrel is from.
And how often does that, I mean, are you ever confounded by what you find?
So far, and these are just our preliminary results, they're not published yet, but we're finding pretty significant differences in North City squirrels versus South City squirrels. Mm-hmm. And so we were very surprised by this. And so we're continuing to test our models to make sure that that is real and not just an accident of sampling.
Mm-hmm. This is a good place to take a quick break, and we'll pick up with that point when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation, a contractor with over four decades of shaping the St. Louis landscape. More at Perrick.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Elizabeth Carlin. We are talking about how humans change the urban environment and how it affects the evolution of wildlife. And we're specifically talking about squirrels. So, Liz, before the break, you had mentioned that preliminary research is showing that genetic differences among squirrels do show up based on where they live, north and south of the Del Mar Divide here in St. Louis. Specifically, what differences are you seeing?
So they're not necessarily adapting. We haven't been able to look at that yet. But in this, what we end up doing is looking at what we call genetic drift. And this is just random sampling. And what you can imagine is if you reach your hand into a bag of M&Ms, you're not going to get an even number of colors. You might have five red M&Ms and one blue M&M and no yellow M&Ms. And maybe you go north of the divide and you reach your hand in that bag of M&Ms and you get a different sampling. And so that's what we're seeing, that these are just population genetic differences that don't necessarily confer special adaptations, but they're just random sampling error.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to a point because you talked about randomness and order and what our understanding of evolution is, because we're discussing evolutionary sort of effects and things that change generation to generation. What do we misunderstand about evolution in the way that you are treating it in your research?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of different things. And I have to admit that when I was a biologist in undergrad, I came with a lot of these misunderstandings. One of them being that I thought evolution took place on the order of millennia. And what we're finding out is that evolution can actually happen very rapidly, especially in species that are reproducing very quickly and having lots of young and have a very short lifespan. So that's within the order of a human lifetime, we can actually see evolution occurring. And the second is that I thought evolution was always natural selection and that there was always adaptation occurring. But evolution is really any change in the frequency of genes in a population. And so that means that we can get things like sampling error, something that we call genetic drift that happens, and that leads to population differentiations.
So you've been here now for about 4 years. With evolution, I mean, is that something that you have been able to observe within a four-year time that there have been some changes in the squirrel population?
So it took me quite a bit of time to learn how to catch squirrels. I thought it was going to be very, very easy. And it took a while to figure out what the right traps were and where I needed to set them and how I needed to bait them. On top of that, I had to have everything approved by the state and by my university. And so it's not necessarily a quick process. It took me quite some time after being here to get out and get those squirrels. And again, we're still analyzing those data. I doubt that we'd see anything happen in those 4 years just because a squirrel's lifespan is about that time. It's probably 2 years in the wild. Mm-hmm. But we don't know.
Yeah.
And I think if I continue this research over the next 20, 30, 40 years, we could start to see some really interesting differences.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else doing squirrel-specific research in an urban area with whom you confer or compare results?
Absolutely. There's a team at Yale that's working on squirrels and in Gisella Cacone's lab. And I'm super interested and have worked with them. They're looking more broadly at cities all across the U.S. and trying to understand broad patterns, whereas I'm focused really on St. Louis and understanding these specific patterns that are happening and why they're happening. Mm-hmm. So diving deep into the social history of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some point, might we literally see changes that are visible in squirrels that are from the north side, squirrels from the south side?
Maybe, but probably not. In the same way that it's kind of hard to tell if someone is from Scotland versus England, right? Physically, unless they open their mouths and you can hear that Scottish accent, we can't really physically tell those differences. So I kind of doubt that within St. Louis, we will be able to notice those physical differences.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned at the top that you are part of a global coalition of scientists who are exploring how human-driven changes to urban environments, how they shape the evolution of wildlife. And the paper that was recently published is in the journal Nature Cities. I don't necessarily think we think of nature and cities together, but this paper not only looks at politics, which we mentioned in the introduction, and effects on urban evolutionary biology, but also of war. What are the side effects of war? And I think this is particularly apropos in St. Louis because we've been talking a lot about contamination of land and the health effects that are felt by people as a result of illegal dumping during and before the Manhattan Project. So what do we know about the way war and all of its sort of components affect wildlife?
Yeah, so obviously during war, during the active phases of war, it is most important to keep people safe. That is our biggest concern. But digital technologies have allowed us during active phases of war to kind of understand better what's happening to wildlife because people are taking pictures of those wildlife. Here in St. Louis, as you mentioned, the Manhattan Project occurred here, and obviously there are downstream effects of the waste that was created. And as far as I know, nobody is studying those effects on the wildlife. I know we have some ideas of what it might be doing to people. And I can imagine that if it's affecting people, it's affecting wildlife. Wildlife are even more tied to the land than we are. They're bearing their food, they're gathering their food, they're drinking the water, all of that from the land.
In terms of a bigger picture and what humans are doing, what they have done, why is it that the evolution of St. Louis's squirrels and other wildlife that are home in this region, why does that matter?
I think humans love nature inherently. I see so many people get excited to see a squirrel and send me pictures of squirrels or tell me a story about a squirrel. And whether they love them or hate them, there's this inherent connection to nature. And I think it's only fair to ensure that the land that we change as humans, we give back some of it to the wildlife that was here before us. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ensure that we're designing cities and thinking about cities in ways that promote both human well-being and wildlife well-being.
Mm-hmm. And do you see that happening at all?
In some cities, I see it happening. Places like Singapore have really decided originally to be the nature city and have now rebranded themselves as a city in nature. Mm-hmm. And as long as there is a will from the city government and from the people, I think there are ways to transform our city to make them great for people and wildlife.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain changes you'd like to see in our local urban landscape?
I would love to see less driving. I would love to see more walkable portions of our city where we can not have to get in our car, which we know are really deadly for these wildlife. And walking is healthy for us as humans, and it's great for the wildlife. It also gives us a chance to stop and see those wildlife, to notice that pizza squirrel, to notice that pigeon that's chewing on a hot dog or trying to peck away at a hot dog. Mm-hmm.
And in our last minute, is there something about parks that we should be thinking differently about?
I really hope that people in St. Louis start to notice the differences in parks all around here. One of the things that I was most surprised about when I moved to St. Louis was how different the parks looked in South City and North City. And so in North City, they're really lacking bushes and short trees. And this is often because then police can have a clear sight line. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that in places like Tower Grove or Forest Park. And so think about those impacts on wildlife.
Mm-hmm. And that is a result of politics, which
that
humans also create.
Exactly.
Elizabeth Carlin is a postdoctoral fellow with the Living Earth Collaborative at Washington University. Liz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.